You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Your health and biochemistry is determined by a delicate balance between your blood markers, hormones, nerves, organs, and systems. Now, this balance or bioregulation is affected by the food we eat, how we sleep, how much we sleep, how well you detoxify, your environment, as well as your genetics. Now, imbalances in one or more of these areas often give rise to chronic diseases that can be very difficult to treat with allopathic medicine, including cardiovascular disease, diabetes, autoimmune disorders, Alzheimer's and cancer. Now, today on Wellness for Life Radio, we have Dr. Dixon Tom, a naturopathic physician and dentist, who is also the co-founder of the American Center of Biological Medicine in Scottsdale, Arizona. He has over 40 years of experience as a clinician and over 20 years as a medical professor. Now, Dr. Tom is the author of new book, Bioregulatory Medicine, and he is here to share his multidimensional approach to healthcare that understands the crucial difference between the symptoms of disease and the root cause of disease. Welcome, Dr. Tom. What an honor it is to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to share with your audience.
Absolutely. Now, what is bioregulatory medicine and what inspired you to write this book?
The bioregulatory medicine is, is the original type of medicine. You know, we talk about conventional medicine or allopathic medicine. Bioregulatory medicine simply means that our focus is really not on disease. Our focus is on really health. Our focus is on appreciation and understanding of why an individual has a specific type of a health problem. So when patients ask me, you know, do I treat migraines? Do I treat cancer? Do I treat, dyspareunia? The answer is no, I don't treat any of those because those are not the person's problem. Those are only a sign that they have a problem. And so our focus is try to understand why somebody would have any of those conditions. And so we look at, our focus mostly is looking at organ systems and the regulation of organ systems. And bioregulatory means how do we regulate all our different organ systems? You know, we have in the conventional model of medicine many specialists. So if you had a high blood pressure problem or palpitations or something, you would think you would go to the cardiologist and the cardiologist would, you know, probably try and fix it. But what I found is that many people with high blood pressure and palpitations, the problem is actually not in their heart. It's in their nervous system. And if you treat their heart, it doesn't really get better. Or they take a medication and it makes them more tired and they don't really feel well, but they say, well, yeah, but your blood pressure's under control, but we're really treating the wrong organ. So when we do bioregulatory, our focus is on all organ systems. So I'm not a specialist per se in any system, but I feel I'm a specialist in health, not in disease. And another aspect is if you had a headache, for example, and, you know, you took a Tylenol, you'd say, well, I wonder if the headache was due to a Tylenol deficiency, which it isn't, of course. And, of course, when that wears off, the headache will come back. However, if we look at what your blood sugar doing, what your blood pressure doing, have you eaten recently? Did you sleep properly? Do you need an adjustment of your cervical spine? Do you need a massage? Are your endocrine system out of balance, et cetera, et cetera? So in that way, we really are looking more for the cause of the problem as opposed to the name of the problem. The only reason we have a name of the problem is because it becomes a convenient way that we can talk with individuals. We can talk with other professionals. We can look up things, to study them. But I think one of the biggest challenges in medicine is that there's too much focus on the symptom. Where the symptom is only the sign that you have a problem, but it never tells you what the problem is. So until we really look at how the body needs to regulate itself, people unfortunately will continue to have, whatever their specific issue is. And so that was the inspiration to write the book because this is my 48th year in medicine in different capacities. And, you know, over all the years, it was frustrating to have people come back and always have the same type issues until we started to address the underlying problems. And you eventually get to a point, well, oh, so that's why I had a headache, or that's why I have, you know, irregular menstrual cycles, or that's why I had, you know, stage two cancer, or whatever it is. So that's really what the focus of the book is, and that's why we wrote it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. You know, I'm a big believer in patient-focused medicine as well. As a chiropractor, we really look for the cause of disease. I shouldn't say disease, but cause of the dysfunction. But I do much more broader sense of healthcare, going really into the regenerative, functional medicine aspect, integrative, going to the root cause of issue. And you call it the original type of medicine. But I really believe this is not just that, but it's the future of medicine. It's what we as patients, as practitioners and healers, we really want to go back to what works rather than trying to cover it up with medications and remove things when it's really maybe part of the process of dealing with the condition.
That's definitely all true. And, you know, if we use the United States as our model, and all the statistics show that, you know, the United States is in the Western world is one of the unhealthiest nations there are, despite the fact that we have the highest cost of healthcare. If we want to call it healthcare, it's probably more disease care is probably a better term that we should be using. Yes, and it is. It's the future of medicine. I think the patients are, in fact, demanding that's what it is, because more and more people are realizing that the use of medications, which are important and serve a very useful function at times, but it never really solves the problem. And you know, with the cost of medications just seeming to keep escalating and healthcare itself being so expensive, people are looking for ways that, you know, things that they can do for themselves, things that we call them, you can follow natural laws that everybody needs to do. As you said, you need to sleep and you need to eat and you need to move your body on a regular basis. You need to drink water, et cetera. That those types of things can have a huge positive impact in the big scheme of things. So I absolutely agree with you that this has to be the future of medicine. First of all, from a cost perspective, but more importantly, because it will allow people to take some of that self-responsibility, which is necessary, and your doctor will be the guide to help you guide that way. But I've never felt that my role was to heal somebody. My role was basically to help guide a person. And, you know, we say, walk beside me. Don't follow me because I may not lead, or don't lead me because I may not follow, but walk together. And we can go on this journey together and help you get to where it is you need to be.
Right. Well said. You know, I come from Korea. And when I think about Korean medicine and herbal medicine, I'm fifth generation when it comes to natural medicine healers in my family. And I've learned so much from my grandmother and just information that's passed on culturally. In America, we definitely have it's a very short history. We don't have very many thousands of years here, right? I mean, sure. But other cultures all around the world, they use ancient medicine. They use the original medicine of their forefathers. And I think that's something really important to be said. If you go to Germany, they've got specific types of homeopathic medicine and homotoxicology medicine. And if you go to China, there's the traditional Chinese medicine. You go to the jungles, there are the natural ancient herbs of the medicine men out there. And so that's something that we're definitely missing here in America. And I think that the way in my culture, we would take all different types of aspects about health, not just about the biochemistry, but also, of course, the energetically and the emotional aspect and the mental, the psycho-emotional patterns that we deal with. And I think what's great about your book is that you actually take into account that those unique factors of a person.
I think the fact of that's well said, well spoken, and I think the fact that you know, when we talk about emotional or mental type things, people immediately jump, oh, I'm not depressed, I'm not anxious, I don't need to see a psychiatrist, et cetera, et cetera. which is true. Many people do not. And that's really, it's beyond that. You know, we have, you mentioned toxicity earlier as one of the factors that, you know, cause some people to be in certain areas of distress. And what I have found dealing with many patients with chronic illness is that we call it emotional toxicity is potentially the greatest impact on somebody's body, because all the research now shows that the brain has a huge impact on all how our organs function. And since bioregulatory is about organ functioning and getting things working together, the emotional aspect becomes very critical. And what we're also learning, and I'm actually writing it in the present, I'm writing another book on our what we call organ development through an energetic perspective, literally from the time of conception until we die, and all the different stages that we go through. And so things that happen to us in utero, things that happen to us as babies and toddlers and grade school and high school and college years, et cetera, have a huge impact on why certain people develop different types of conditions and different types of problems. And obviously, from a conception, baby, toddler aspect, you know, who are they around? They're around parents or around grandparents or around siblings. And what I found is with working with these people with a variety of chronic illnesses, that often those types of problems will stem from something that happened to them when they were very young, which, of course, they don't have any conscious memory of. But we know it's buried into their unconscious. And so it could be a sight, it could be a sound, it could be a smell that basically is a trigger to their subconscious without them knowing it, which is maybe why they get upset, they get angry, or they're happy, et cetera. And these types of influences on the person's nervous system ultimately plays a huge role in how our immune system works, how our heart works, how our digestive system works. Irritable bowel syndrome, for example, which is one of the more common reasons that people go and see a gastroenterologist. And we know the main treatment of that is from an emotional perspective. And when that is looked at, and that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we have to take something for anxiety or an antidepressant, et cetera. It just means we need to bring it to our level of consciousness so we're able to understand that some type of stresses will basically upset our digestive system, for example. You know, another common one that seems to come up is people with pancreatic cancer who, you know, very, very tragic condition. But I often say to them, well, it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you. And very often we will find an emotional trigger, and you'll hear some challenge that they've had on an emotional level. And that ultimately becomes a really critical component of the overall management of the individual patient. So it's not about necessarily finding the right herb or homeopathic or nutraceutical or conventional medicine for that matter. It's about looking at all aspects, their physical body, their emotional body, their spiritual body, their mental body, as you said.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in connecting to your past and working through it. You know, there's what's called adverse childhood experiences, ACEs. Are you familiar with ACEs? Because it sounds to me that's exactly what you're talking about. And there was this quiz, the ACEs quiz, and I actually did it myself. And I was shocked that I actually had pretty much I answered yes to every question except one. And I was floored because, you know, when I think about myself, I dealt with a great deal of trauma as a child. I really did. Thank goodness that I was able to overcome quite a bit of a lot of the emotional burdens that many people that I've gone through, you know, people who've gone through similar experiences, it's been a lot of work on my part though, because I've had to recognize a great deal of some of the traumas and emotional burdens that I was feeling had to do with childhood, where I lived and my upbringing and coming from a foreign country and coming into America, feeling shame. And I mean, there's just so many things, but my goodness, It truly is important that we all deal with it rather than putting it under the, you know, carpet, saying that, you know what, it's not going to bother me and I'm just going to like push through it. People got to really recognize, and it's great that you're going to be, you're writing your next book. That's going to be really exciting to talk about the next time you come here.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, just that same aspect, you know, the term that I call that is, we call those learned perceptions, because how we respond as an adult, let's say, very often is because it's a mimic of something that we experienced earlier in our life without really knowing that that's what we were doing. And I know they've done research for identical twins, for example, who may have had, as you just described, what is perceived as a trauma, but only one of the twins would perceive it as a trauma, and the other twin said, well, there's nothing wrong with that, even if they're identical genetically. So a lot of how we respond and a lot of types of conditions, and people always said, you know, well, we have so many different types of conditions, and why does one person have a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis, another person has a diagnosis of cancer, another person has a diagnosis of depression? And, you know, underlying all that could be the same trauma, but how the person responded to it is different based on their perception, based on what their experiences were, just as you just described for yourself personally.
And of course, just from that perception, how we read the situation, that affects our regulatory system. Isn't that right? It affects
our
nervous system. Even at the skin level, you can feel a difference with your skin, and how the vibration and how you pick up that energy will shift everything. And I'm constantly working and, you know, developing my own health and optimizing my ability to be able to regulate my heart rate variability, of course, and my sympathetic dominant state. You know, I had just treated a patient this week, Dr. Tom, and a woman that is in her 50s. And the first thing that she told me was that, you know, she just talking to me, she's been my patient for a little while, but she still feels anxious when she's talking to me, and she feels a shortness of breath. So a lot of things that I do is we talk on the phone, and as a healer, and as you have been for over 40 years, I've been in practice for 30, you get a sense, you know, we have the extra sense and intuitiveness. And I actually found that for her, I use muscle testing, but I also had a sense that it came from birth trauma. So we went into her birth trauma, and she was information that she didn't tell me during our history, that she was a preemie.
Right.
She came into this world 1 month before, and the first thing she had was antibiotics. She was in an incubator. She had no touch of human contact, really, except gloves and you know, the usual. And this was many, many years ago. So the information about having human contact wasn't even available. And so that was a scary experience for her. And I think that was the beginning, just starting with that birth trauma, how she perceived the survival mechanism she had to go into at such an early age, you know, right coming into this world. That's what she's still carrying today.
I couldn't agree more. The, you know, that that whole aspect. And many times it takes something like your therapy that you're doing with testing. And because many times what I found is patients are have no memory of it. Obviously, as you know, who else can remember their birth? I mean, it's like, technically, it's buried in our subconscious, but you need some type of, as you're doing with, you know, muscle testing and a variety of different types of things. What I find over time with using energetic therapies, which is what we use and describe in the book, where very often people will start to have dreams of their childhood, or dreams about people that they were friends with but may not have spoken to for the last 20 or 30 or 40 years, and suddenly they start thinking about them, and things start to come back like that, and they start to learn. There's an appreciation of why they have specific issues are not really about where they are presently, but really is about this perception of what happened to them, as you just described in this patient at their birth.
Right. There's like a
retracing. But it can happen at any age.
Right.
A totally retracing. Yes.
Retracing. Absolutely. You talked about energetic medicine, and I, many, many years ago, when my son was suffering from a great deal of allergies, when he was born, he had an enormous amount of health issues. And that's part of the reason why I shifted my practice from sports medicine into more of an alternative medicine and allergies and environmental medicine. And one of the areas that really helped him recover was through homotoxicology and the drainage methodologies that I learned from German biologics. So I know you go into that in your book. I'd love to just hit on that a little bit and express how important that is so that people understand this is something that they can do and take care of their own self by working on their own detoxification pathways. Can we hit on that just for a couple of minutes?
Sure. This is the time of year that people often talk about sort of detox after we've gone through the holiday season. And, you know, people say, oh, it's time I need to go to the gym or I need to change my diet because I gained a few pounds over the holiday season, et cetera. So they have this idea that, you know, you can change your diet or for a week or two or drink this or drink that. And, you know, suddenly all these things will be removed. However, from a physiologic perspective, that's not exactly how it works. And, you know, there's a difference between a sort of detox, which is simply to make something less toxic, and drainage, which is to get it out of the body. There are five main ways that the body will remove, we'll call it stored toxicity. And it could be a physical toxin, whether from it's a pesticide or a mercury amalgam filling, or this emotional toxicity we talked about earlier. So we need to use our lungs because we breathe things out. We need to use our urinary tract to, you know, get a liquid waste out. We use our digestive tract to get solid waste out. We also use our skin, as you mentioned earlier, as a way to excrete things. And then we have the fifth one is the emotional emunctory, as I call it. So drainage is this process that facilitates those five areas to be able to eliminate what the body no longer serves a purpose and are which are being held onto. People are often familiar with the idea if they've had mercury fillings and they've gone to a practitioner who says, oh, you have heavy metal toxicity. We need to do some form of a detox to get rid of that kind of thing. And sometimes those therapies can be quite harsh. The person can get actually feel more unwell than well from doing it. However, drainage is the process using energetic therapies, as you described, that basically do not exceed what we call physiologic limits. And we just sort of take the body to its ability to physiologically remove things through the bowels, through the kidney, urinary tract, through the skin, through the lungs, et cetera. And that way, the person doesn't become more ill from the treatment. The drainage is really probably the main aspect of how I address all patients with any of nature of their specific type of a problem. And there's a number of different types of therapeutics, but as you just said, energetically, and whether that's homeopathically, whether that's doing a craniosacral manipulation, whether that's using acupuncture, whether that's using manipulation of some type of energy is being put into the patient to facilitate the physiologic removal of something that no longer serves a purpose in the body. I tend to think of the liver as our filter, just like the air filter in your automobile, you know, filters the air so the gas burns clean and that type of thing. Your liver does that same purpose. Literally everything that's taken into your system that gets out of the digestive tract or out of the lung has to pass through the liver, and the liver says, oh, well, this is okay or this isn't okay. And if it isn't okay, it'll try and push it towards one of those five areas, those five emunctories. And that's really what drainage is all about. It's about eliminating things that the body does serves no purpose and, in fact, may interfere with normal physiologic processes, which then interfere with the normal bioregulation that all our organ systems have. So it really is an important part of every patient management, no matter if it's a young baby, as you described with your own family, or it's somebody who's 75 years old and, you know, has osteoporosis per se. We're always focusing on how do we make the body be more efficient with our bioregulatory systems.
You know, I'm a big believer in drainage therapies and doing physical things to activate all of those processes that you were just mentioned, your lungs, your urinary, the digestive, the skin, all that. And, you know, last year I was on the Heavy Metal Summit as one of the expert speakers, about 35 of us. And there were like 80,000 people online listening in to all of our talks, and mine was specifically on drainage. And I found out that I was the number one speaker, voted speaker. And I think not because it was such a, you know, I've given them so many cool things. It's really about teaching them things that they've never used before, learning about things that they've never really even heard about, draining the emunctories, draining those organs that are necessary, the sewage system, to get out the toxins and get it moving before you really go and detox. And it sounds to me, of course, obviously, that's what you're saying as well. And I think that drainage is something that you can do every day, making sure that you urinate well, and you're having good bowel movements well, and you're exercising and sweating. All of this is something that you daily. It's not a thing that you do like every few months. It's like a daily action.
couldn't agree more. And you're right. So that's why we encourage people to, you know, drink clean water. You know, it's not about drinking, you know, a soda or a pop or drinking a lot of alcohol or a lot of coffee. It's about, we need clean water. You know, and when I share with patients is, you know, if you're basically going to wash your dishes in the sink, would you ever change the water? Would you just keep using the same water? So the whole idea is you constantly need to be flushing and flushing, and water is the proper thing. And you're right about the bowels need to be. That comes down to, you know, what is the correct diet for the individual to make sure that emunctory is working efficiently. And you mentioned the lungs and how important breathing is. And we look at the sort of, I'll call it the ancient management or the ancient condition of doing yoga. And, you know, we think of yoga as doing postures, but in reality, yoga is about how to learn to breathe properly. And generally, people have forgot how to breathe because they don't think of it as a conscious effort. They think of it as an unconscious activity. And, you know, so I share with people that, you know, we should minimally, you know, we take about 15 to 17,000 breaths a day. If we just focus on 100 of them, where we think about our breath and not make it unconscious, just that is a tremendous way to remove a lot of these volatile toxins that get into our lungs, and we can breathe them out on a regular basis. So it's a very important aspect that we need to be mindful of, for sure.
Oh God, you just reminded me of one time I went to a yoga practice class, and it was New Year's Day. It was a really great, you know, class, and one of my favorite teachers. And what was so crazy is I actually had to leave the yoga center. And the reason was, after about 20 minutes of everyone sweating, I could smell the toxicity in the air, and my eyes were burning. I'm not kidding. My eyes were burning, and it's got to be that all the acetaldehyde from the alcohol conversion from everyone's body was coming out through their skin, and I was dying. It was just crazy. So, it was a good thing that I learned a good lesson, is that, you know, I'd never go to a yoga center after a big holiday event. Goodness. You know what?
True enough.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Tom. Wow. Dr. Tom, such great information. Bioregulatory Medicine, your book, where can we find it? And then more about your work.
Well, our website is thebiomedcenter.com. I'm here in Scottsdale, Arizona. The book is available on Amazon. So you can, you know, type my name in, Dr. Tom, THOM, Bioregulatory Medicine. You'll find it there. I think you'll find it extremely valuable addition to your library. I think you'll be quite excited about some of the things that you'll learn about things that you can do for yourself, as you mentioned, on a daily basis that will help you. And certainly from professional support, you know, that can be offered also. So to put you on this journey of moving in a direction towards wellness, which is what we'd like to do into our old age. So it's been a real pleasure to be a part of the conversation today, and we'll look forward to more of these conversations.
Oh, absolutely, Dr. Tom. Gosh, thank you so much. Wow, that was amazing. Bioregulatory medicine. This is good for anyone, families, children, even for teenagers to read, because you know what? You got to start early on. Also, for practitioners, this is surely going to be a book on my bookshelf. And anyone who's listening out there, if you learned a great deal of valuable information here, do share the show with your loved ones. It can really change their life for the better. And if this is your first time listening to our show, please subscribe so I can continue to serve you with the most current natural health information available today. Connect with me on Instagram at Dr. Suzanne. I post regularly on how to become the best version of yourself through self-care, nutrition, and kimchi, movement, and lifestyle. And what's great is that you're going to be able to engage with me directly. And yes, I respond to all the comments personally. Now, if you need to dig deeper to get to the root cause of your health issues so you can feel better again, I work with people globally through the phone and Skype consultations. Just go to my website, drsuzanne.com, for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.